From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro Fillmore District.
Coming up, we're going to be joined live by one of public radio's biggest stars, Planet Money's Robert Smith. He'll help us dig into the history of the system that decides who gets California's water.
We have claims on sticks in the ground. And after, you know, 10 or 20 years, it's possible the piece of paper falls off.
Then we'll find out what two Northern California chickens have to do with the world's biggest e-commerce site. And why people volunteer to keep their eyes on San Francisco's cash.
Not the sexy committee in the city that people fall over each other to serve on.
Talking about money never felt so good today on Cross Currents. First, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Senate Democrats banded together today to block a measure rejecting the nuclear deal with Iran. But NPR's Elsa Chang reports Senate Republicans are not entirely giving up, indicating they're prepared to try another vote.
For days, the president has had enough votes in the Senate to keep the nuclear deal with Iran alive. The remaining question was, would Democrats block the Republican-led resolution of disapproval from reaching a final vote, or would they let it pass and sustain the president's veto later? Democrats chose the first option, but their Republican colleagues may try to hold the same vote again. After all, Congress has until September 17th before the deal goes into effect, and it's not like Capitol Hill to finish up business before a deadline. Of course, the sooner lawmakers get done considering the Iran deal, the sooner they can start finding a way to keep the government funded past September 30th. Elsa Chang, NPR News, the Capitol.
Top intelligence officials told Congress today there is still no indication that personal data hacked from the Office of Personnel Management's computer system has been misused. As NPR's David Wellner explains, at least 22 million current and former federal employees and job applicants were targeted in the OPM breach.
Director of National Intelligence James Clapper told the House Intelligence Committee the OPM data was simply stolen.
There's been no evidence surfaced to this point of the use of this data in a nefarious way, either against individuals or institutionally. That's not to say we're not mindful of that and that we're not watching for it.
For his part, FBI Director James Comey said credit monitoring has been provided to his employees.
I feel like that's buying people flood insurance when their neighborhood just burned down. The fire is what I'm worried about. It's not people's credit cards and their credit rating.
That fire, Comey added, is the possible use of that data to thwart U.S. intelligence operations. David Wellner, NPR News, Washington.
The White House announced today it may be moving closer to agreeing to accept thousands of Syrian refugees in response to the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Europe. According to White House spokesman Josh Earnest, President Obama says he wants the number up significantly.
He's informed his team that he would like them to accept at least 10,000 Syrian refugees in the next fiscal year.
Hundreds of thousands of refugees and migrants have flooded Europe this year as they seek to escape war and conflict in their countries. Fewer people were filing first-time claims for unemployment benefits last week. According to the Labor Department, initial jobless claims fell by 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 275,000. Meanwhile, the four-week moving average, which smooths out some of the volatility in the weekly numbers, barely budged, up by just 500. Stocks posted modest gains. All three of the major indices rose slightly on a day when there was little in the way of major economic news. The Dow gained 76 points to 16,330. The Nasdaq was up 39 points. The S&P rose 10 points. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Cross Currents from KALW News. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area. I'm Hanat Baba, and we're in our fall membership campaign, so we're bringing you a special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. And today on the show, we're breaking down big concepts into great stories. And to help us, we've got a radio superstar who's mastered this, Robert Smith from NPR's Planet Money podcast. Hey, Robert.
Hey, thanks for having me on. You are too kind, really.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, maybe you listen to him on the podcast, or maybe you listen to him in your car. Planet Money makes stories for Morning Edition. Robert, how do you describe Planet Money to people?
Well, our sort of official description is imagining a conversation you'd have in a bar with somebody who knows something about the economy, and you have these sort of questions like, what's really happening in China right now? Or why is the stock market going up and down? Do I need to worry about that? That's the main question. Do I need to worry about that? And now you imagine that conversation in the bar was actually fun and interesting and rollicking. That's the kind of vibe we're going for with Planet Money. And I think it sort of started because a lot of us who consider ourselves very smart and knowledgeable about the world would read things in the Wall Street Journal and not understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and smart people are unwilling to admit that they don't know what a credit default swap is. They'll be just like, oh, yeah, those are terrible. Yeah, I guess, right? They're bad.
That thing.
And so we gave people permission to say, hey, what is that? And should I worry about it? And how does it work? And who are the people involved? And who invented it, you know? And who runs those things? And everything in the economy was invented by someone. There are real people doing real jobs with real lives at stake. And we're just trying to find those stories.
Okay. And how, like, why you and why the economy and money? You don't have an economics background necessarily, right? Was it just, like, curiosity?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a curiosity, like I'm sure you do, and many reporters and smart people do, about how the world works. There are systems out there. There are principles out there, and whether they be scientific principles or economic principles, like, I've always been interested in that sort of secret way the world works. Mm. And so, no, I don't make a lot of money. I don't know that much about finance. I never studied economics, but I love asking the questions, like, why do people do the things they do? And a lot of those are really money related questions. I mean, we have jobs, we work, we make decisions based on how much this avocado costs versus this kind of avocado. Every day we make those decisions. And the fun thing about economics is that they're thinking about why you're doing that, even if you don't know why you're doing it.
So, and you manage to make these stories, you know, seemingly a dry topic. If someone hears economics or money, but these stories are so engaging and fun. And so I'm going to ask you a question here. How open was NPR to this approach? Because there's a perception that, you know, NPR is your radio home. And, you know, there's a perception that it is stuffy and really academic, and your style is, you know, so far from that. So I'm wondering, like, how open is NPR to this approach of, you know, having fun and this different approach?
You know, I think they're really open to it. For a long time, I'll put it this way: the people I know who work at NPR, the reporters, are some of the funniest people in the world. A lot of the stuff that they say could never make it on the air, but they're so smart and they're so funny. And for a long time, NPR had a certain formality to it because we took this very, very seriously, right? People are relying on us for information. And I think styles change, and you're hearing this more in our political coverage and our coverage of race through Code Switch, just a more human way of approaching some of these things. I mean, styles change, right? You know, the New York Times has loosened its style. NPR is loosening its style. And, you know, just the other day, we received a very kind note from our new CEO, Jarl Mann, who was praising our story we did about guessing the weight of a cow. Uh-huh. And so he's our boss. And he, you know, we were having the time of our lives making kids guess how much this cow weighed. So if he likes it, then I think we're good to go.
Great. Well, you are joining us today, and this is the third day of our fall membership campaign. Robert, you've been in public radio for a long time. Why do you think people should support their local public radio station?
Well, first of all, the way you support things like Planet Money and NPR is through your local station. That's how we get our money. That's how they get their money. And what I like to say is that, think of the greatest story you've ever heard on NPR or KALW, the story that you told your friends about. Somebody paid for that story. Like, maybe it was your neighbor, maybe it was your coworker. Somebody gave money and made that story possible. And so I always just ask people, like, do the same for someone else.
And I'll show them how.
Make the next great story possible.
Let me show them how. Give us a call right now at 800-525-9917. Make a contribution that goes towards our fall membership campaign. We bring you local voices, Bay Area perspectives on national issues and global issues, really. And we're keeping these drives short. So 800-525-9917, we're keeping it short, and we are going to go to our first story. So you probably know that we're in a drought, but I bet you didn't know that you can still apply for a right to use California's water. There's a system set up that decides who gets that water as the supply gets low. It's an order of priority that began more than a century ago. We sent KLW's Audrey Dilling to claim her place in line.
As the story goes, in the summer of 1901, San Francisco's mayor, James D. Phelan, hiked up to an oak tree near the north bank of the Tuolumne River in Yosemite's Hetch Hetchy Valley. And not to go all clickbait on you, but what he did next altered the life of every San Franciscan since. He nailed a piece of paper to that oak tree that said the water flowing by it belonged to the city of San Francisco. So if you've ever wondered why we get first dibs to water almost 200 miles away, it's because of a piece of paper nailed to a tree in 1901. And today, I intend to do the same thing.
Okay, into the canyon.
I'm at Glen Canyon Park in San Francisco, where you can find one of the city's few creeks.
I just noticed that you're carrying a hammer. That's kind of terrifying.
I've brought along KALW News reporter Emma Nobel because it's always better to have someone with you when you're doing something ridiculous. Now, if you're thinking, you're in San Francisco, you have no need to claim water. You're totally right. Phelan's piece of paper is why water comes out of my tap. But while I don't need a water right at this moment, anyone can apply for one, even after 4 years of drought. If I want to get in line for some of California's water, I can.
And describe what you're doing?
Yeah. So, well, I'm just going to grab the snail. I have my piece of paper, which says, claimed in the name of Audrey Dilling and Emma Nobel. I'm going to bend down here. And just like California settlers, I am going to consider this water source claimed.
Congratulations.
It feels pretty good.
Yeah.
After I staked my claim, I tried calling up the people in charge of California's water, just to make sure everything was cool.
Please listen to this message very carefully.
Turns out, they're very busy right now.
This phone number is receiving a high volume of calls, both from accredited media as well as concerned citizens that are calling the water board with ideas for water conservation.
Okay, so it's going to be a while before I figure out if my right is good, but I do have history on my side.
I'm Michael Hanneman. I'm a professor of environmental and resource economics. I do water and climate change and these other things for fun.
Hanneman is writing a book on California water rights and how the paper-to-tree system took hold.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more of the history.
So remember James Phelan and his tree? Well, when he posted his sign, he claimed an amount of water that might strike someone today as a very bizarre quantity. 10,000 miner's inches. A miner's inch is a unit of measure based on the amount of water that flows by a given point in a river per minute. Don't think about that too long. It starts to hurt after a while. The point is,
the first large-scale use of water in California was for mining.
Miners. When they showed up in California in 1849, they looked for gold in streams and rivers. And they posted notices near the places they were looking to say, hey, I was here first. Go find your gold somewhere else.
But then we moved away from the rivers to try and get at the source of the gold. And the technique was to take water, spray it under high pressure to wash away the hillside to get at the gold.
So where at first miners were just claiming the spot on a river where they were actually looking for gold, now they started claiming the water and moving it. they would still post a notice saying when they got there and how much water they were taking, per minute or whatever. Hanneman says this system actually worked pretty well. So well that when the next large-scale users showed up, cities and farmers, they just jumped on board with the same system. And this moment really matters, because it's where the problems start. Now,
with gold, your motive is to discover gold. Most of the places you look at don't have gold. So basically, you're coming, you're searching. Most of the time, you don't find anything, and you move on.
The miners didn't claim their water forever. When the gold ran out, they pulled up their signs and moved on. That's not the same for farming.
You're interested in using this water on an ongoing basis for the next 100, 200, 300 years.
You don't move on. So suddenly we're talking about a whole lot more people needing a whole lot more water. And there was another problem. No one was really keeping track of those claims.
We have claims on sticks in the ground. And after, you know, 10 or 20 years, it's possible the piece of paper falls off. We don't have central records.
I just really want to emphasize that for decades, California's system of record keeping for water relied on people remembering that one time there was a sign next to a river somewhere. In 1914, the state tried to formalize things. They said everyone with pre-1914 rights was first in line for California's water. They had what's called senior water rights, and they still have them. Then the state started handing out new rights, first come, first served. Those new rights were called junior rights. But when it came to how much water was left to hand out, the state was guessing.
Nobody really knows the amount of water with the pre-1914 rights.
Hello, it's Ted.
Hi, Ted. Ted Grantham works with the U.S. Geological Survey, and he's done a lot of research on California's water rights at UC Davis.
It's long been known that the total volume of water that's been granted to the water rights system greatly exceeds natural supplies.
Grantham and a colleague wanted to figure out by how much. And not to go all clickbait on you again, but what they found was shocking. California has promised people five times more water than it actually has. And that's just for the post-1914 rights. Remember, we don't really know how many pre-1914 rights are out there, and those people have first dibs.
Okay, so how come if water is over-allocated in this way, why can somebody still get a water right today?
Well, at a statewide level, you see this this general pattern of over-allocation. For an individual river basin, there may actually be additional water available.
Let's go over that again. Essentially, what Grantham is saying is that each river has its own line of people who want water. Some lines are really long. Like on the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers, which supply about two-thirds of the state, that water is claimed 10 times over. So don't bother getting in line. The state won't let you. But other lines aren't so long. Which brings me back to my original quest. Grantham says the shorter lines are in places like Sonoma and Mendocino County, where water use pressures are just starting to kick in.
If I was to go down there with a piece of paper and nail it to a tree with my name on it, would I have a right to that water?
You know, I don't believe so. I think the days of just planting your flag and claiming a right are over.
Gotcha. Bummer.
Grantham says nowadays, you file an application with the state.
That's Audrey Dilling, and that's part one of Audrey's story. We'll hear part two in a couple of minutes. I'm Hannah Baba, and you're listening to Cross Currents. I'm here with Robert Smith from NPR's Planet Money. Robert, are you intrigued? Do you want to guess?
I want to know if she gets it. I want to know if she gets it. And this is great because we've heard so many stories about the drought. I have never heard of the story of this paper and the tree. I've never heard this before. It's awesome.
First time. So I am also intrigued. We will find out in a minute. But we quickly want to remind our listeners that we are in our fall membership campaign. Give us a call right now at 800-525-9917 to make a contribution to local public radio that intrigues you. and keeps you wondering and really brings you stories that touch your everyday life. The drought and water issues are core these days here in California, and all of us are thinking about it. Support that reporting by giving us a call, 800-525-9917, or you can go to kalw.org and make your donation there. A click, they say, is as good as a call. It all goes to supporting Cross Currents, keeping Cross Currents reporters out in the field with their recorders in hand in the strangest of places.
And their hammers.
And their hammers as well. And nails. And we'll find out about that in a little bit. Thanks a lot. Now, let's get back to reporter Audrey Dilling. And when we last heard from her, she was trying to get a water right. Let's see what happens.
I think the days of just planting your flag and claiming a right are over.
Gotcha. Bummer. Grantham says nowadays, you file an application with the state. Way less fun than I thought. And it turns out, way more time-consuming. The process can take a few years to even a couple decades. I guess I'm not going to get a water right in time for my deadline for this story. But that might not be such a loss, because having a water right is no guarantee of water. Last year, after 3 years of drought, the state told junior rights holders to stop taking water. There wasn't enough to satisfy all the claims. And now, even those with senior rights are struggling.
So this is kind of, Grantwood is like a Garden of Eden. We grow grapes, here are these muscat grapes. Those are olives for olive oil. Those are
I'm at Frog Hollow Farm with Al Korchesny, or as he's known around here, Farmer Al. We're in Brentwood, out by the California Delta. This is where rights outnumber water by 10 times.
Those are over off in the distance. Those are our blood oranges that we harvest in February.
The farm is an explosion of color. Green pears, orange apricots, red tomatoes. It really is like Eden. Lucky for Farmer Al, he gets his water from an irrigation district with senior rights. But earlier this summer, the state did something it's done only once before. It started telling those senior rights holders to stop taking water.
Have you had to let any plants go due to limited supply?
No, it's like I say, the supply hasn't been limited. It's just been expensive.
When Farmer Al's irrigation district got cut off, it had to start buying water from another district, one with even more senior rights. So Farmer Al still has water, but it's a lot more expensive.
That's about $12,000 in irrigation, whereas before it was costing us about $1,500. It's onerous, and it's going to really bite into our ability to make a living here as farmers.
And it's making it hard for some residents, too. Not far from where Farmer Al lives is a suburb called Mountain House. They ran out of water too and had to scramble to buy some from a nearby district. They got enough to get through the summer, but it's not a good long-term solution. If the drought goes on, this situation is going to become more common. It already happened here in the Bay Area. East Bay Mud raised rates to buy extra water.
Would you be willing to take less to make sure that more people at least got some water?
That's like asking, should we not eat food? I mean, remember farms are what produce food.
Farmer Al's irrigation district is suing the state to get its right to take water back. Around California, other senior rights holders are planning to do the same. UC Berkeley scholar Michael Hanneman says lawsuits are really the only tool water rights holders can use to settle disputes. And he says they're a bad tool.
So suppose there are eight water users along a stream, but two of them happen to get into a dispute and sue one another, and the judge rules, let's say, in favor of one of the two parties. The two parties might be junior to all the other six parties, but the court doesn't know that and doesn't grant the other six parties any rights over the two who are litigating because they're not in the court.
Hanneman says this just leads to more disorder. But there's a place in California that's tried something different, down by the Kings River in the Sierras. Now get ready for this. It's pretty complicated.
There's a list.
Okay, it's actually not that complicated.
The list has the names of all the water users, the dates which give their seniority, and the amounts of water that attach to their right.
Hanneman says California needs to do what the Kings River rights holders did. Make a real list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, of all water right holders in the state. not the patchwork of incomplete information we have now. That way, if the water supply gets low, we know for sure who gets the water and who doesn't. Getting that list would take a lot of work, but Hanneman says that if we could get it, we might then consider going one step further and doing something like Australia did.
The Australian system would be we all have percentage rights. Some may have rights to a large percentage, others to a small percentage.
The legislature could decide that that's a more appropriate water right priority system.
Tom Howard is executive director of the State Water Resources Control Board in Sacramento. He says there's a lot to think about before overhauling the rights system, like the many people who have established businesses based on a set amount of water they expect to get, people like Farmer Al. But there are ways to make our current system better, like better oversight, putting more gauges on streams that measure water level more precisely, and making that accurate list of rights holders.
So you don't need any change in law in order to put these things in place, but you do need to dedicate the resources necessary to put them in place. And, you know, it's just that there hasn't been the will to do it.
At least, not yet. Since I came all the way to Sacramento, there's one last stop I have to make.
Well, records rooms, as you know, are very exciting places.
About 20 floors below Tom Howard's office is the records room, the holy land for water rights.
So, would somebody like to show her the safe and everything? Oh, yeah. I do not have the combination.
Oh, I just got to remember it myself.
Records manager Matt Jay opens the safe and pulls out a folder.
That's the 49th application that was filed with the state of California.
Can we see what name is on that?
Let me see. Sometimes it's hard to find the actual applicant names. There we go. Alden P. White.
So that's from 1919?
Yes, July 3rd, 1919.
Alden P. White. Guess I should have gotten in line when you did. For Cross Currents, I'm Audrey Dilling.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. That was Audrey Dilling, an amazing story. I'm here with Robert Smith from NPR's Planet Money team. Hey, Robert.
Hey.
So, what did you think? What did you think of that?
Oh, it was fantastic. And I think in 50 years or so, Audrey will come up on that list, right? 100 years? 200 years? What's it going to take?
Yeah.
But she's going to need the water then, I think.
Oh,
somebody's going to need it.
Oh, no. Well, you recently did some reporting on how some farmers are actually profiting from the drought. Can you talk about how?
Well, yeah, we talked about how, and this was sort of a slightly different story because it was talking about the aquifer. And an aquifer, as you know, is a big underground lake of which everyone can sort of take their fill of the lake, right? Mm-hmm. And so this was about the attempt to go deeper and deeper, longer and longer straws. And it was really like a lot of economic stories about incentives, which is, you know, everybody's trying to cut back on water usage. Everyone's worried about it. Mm. But if you're all sipping from the same underground lake and you cut back, means your neighbor could take even more water. Mm-hmm. And so these were people who were saying basically because things like pistachios and nuts, the prices are going up because there is a drought. There's more economic incentive to grow those really thirsty nuts and to take as much water as possible and to go deeper and deeper in the wells. It's sort of a classic misplaced incentives problem. That's why we love the story because economically, it's screwed up. It's not just an environmental question. It's an economic question.
Right. And at Planet Money, you guys also have mastered the art of explaining the economy by actually being a part of the story. You bought a toxic asset and you named it Toxy. And you decided to follow the process of making a T-shirt by making your own Planet Money T-shirt, this immersion reporting. Why do you tell stories this way and why do you think they're more effective like that?
Well, I mean, people want to hear stories about other people. And those are the best kind of stories if you can find someone who's a really compelling character. But sometimes you can't find that character. If you're talking about toxic assets, it is a collection of properties. That's what it is. Mm. Or if you're talking about international trade, there are people involved on it. But really, the character of a T-shirt it can't speak itself. So in those cases, what we try to do is just throw ourselves into the story. We follow it like someone who's curious about it. Like, how does it work? We also just shorted the stock market. Unfortunately, we shorted the stock market while it was going up, so we lost a lot of money. But it allowed us to say, like, what does it mean to be a short seller? What does it mean to bet against the economy, to bet against the United States of America and be a short seller? And what does that mean? And it sort of gets you to understand the process, but it also, you meet all the people along the way who are part of the process. You know, when we made that T-shirt, I was thinking about it, that a lot of times we'd visit these countries, Bangladesh, Indonesia, who were making our T-shirt, and we didn't go as reporters. We went as business people. We were making the T-shirt. We got to meet factory people we wouldn't have met otherwise because we were in the T-shirt business for a short period of time. And it gave us that sort of access, but also just gave us a fun way to think about these common objects that
right.
we don't quite understand.
And also the aspect of the true cost of something, right? The true cost of that T-shirt, what it really means to make that T-shirt. And here at KLW, we like, you know, the kind of the exploring these things. We have done the true cost of burritos. And so I was wondering, what are you curious to explore the true cost of? What's next?
Oh, that's, you know, it's interesting. For a long time, we have wanted to buy a barrel of oil because, like, I have basic questions that I don't know the answer to. Like, can you actually get a barrel anymore? I know it's a unit of measurement, but would somebody sell us a steel barrel? And would somebody fill up that barrel with oil? And where would we take it? And what would the process be? And are we at that point competing with OPEC? See, part of Planet Money and part of, you know, what Audrey was doing in this story is you take questions that you have that are just kind of stupid questions you might not even want to ask out loud. Like, does a barrel exist anymore? And you just call up people and you ask them. You say, this may sound like a really stupid question, but will you sell me a barrel? Is that even legal?
Right.
And so, you know, we find that sort of cultivating your, I was going to say your inner child, but it's really, it's kind of your inner naivete, really,
and
about the world. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know what I'm curious about, Robert?
Yeah.
I am curious to see if we can make our challenge today, because this is our fall membership campaign. We're inviting our listeners to call right now at 800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org. I think that's one of the best segues I've done so far.
That was good.
Oh, we're looking for...
We knew it was coming. We knew it was coming,
oh,
but
yeah.
We didn't know how it was going to come.
Oh, yeah. Got to get creative. We are looking to get 30 calls or clicks this hour. 30 calls or clicks until from now until 6 o'clock. Give us a call, 800-525-9917 or at kalw.org. And KLW audience, you have been challenged by Janet Solid in San Francisco, who's putting down $365, but only if we get the 30 calls or clicks. And we told her we could do it, and we told her we would do it, because that's, you know, our listeners always come through, and we appreciate them. Give us a call, 800-525-9917. And let me tell you, if you're a person who likes our gifts that we have here at KELW, for a $120 contribution, we will send you this book by Jessica Abel, Out on the Wire, The Storytelling Secrets of the New Masters of Radio. And one of them is the person talking to me right now, Planet Money's Robert Smith is in this book. Robert.
It is an awesome book. I am one of the minor people in this book. It's got Ira Glass. It's got Roman Mars. It's got the luminaries of public radio showing you how they do their work. It is a fantastic book. I have two of them. I'm going to buy them for all of my friends, everyone who wants to learn radio. This is the book to tell you how we tell these stories. It's fantastic. And it's a comic book. Come on, people.
Now, have you seen yourself in comic form before?
I look much better in comic form than I do in real life. I will tell you that. She flattered everybody.
Take a look at on Out on the Wire is the book. Sorry. The Storytelling Secrets of the new Masters of Radio, including Robert Smith. $120 will get you the book if you give us a call now at 800-525-9917. And it says here, Robert, that you in the book let us in on your slightly goofy strategy for putting interviewees at ease. Can you tell us what that is? What's that
I basically sound like an idiot a lot of the time, which is both somewhat true and somewhat cultivated, where I ask really silly questions and I make jokes and I basically say to them, like, you know, it's like at a cocktail party. Someone tells a story and someone wants to tell you a better story. That's what I kind of do. I tell a really bad joke and they're like, I can say something funnier. I can say something better. And then, of course, I just cut out my bad joke and they sound great on the radio. That's my secret. But it's embarrassing, I'll tell you. It's embarrassing.
That's Robert Smith from Planet Money. If you join us right now at 800-525-9917, make a contribution of $120 and we will send you the book that includes Robert Smith and many other new masters of radio. And if you wanted to bump it up a little higher and contribute $240, we will send you the book and two tickets to meet some of these masters of radio at an event at the JCCSF. You will meet Roman Mars of 99% Invisible and Glenn Washington of Snap Judgment and the author herself, Jessica Abel. That's for a $240 contribution. It's really, really, really a great opportunity for anybody listening out there, but especially if you're into storytelling, you really want to know the secrets of public radio, give us a call, 800-525-9917. So now we're actually going to take a listen to a Planet Money story, one that involves chickens, motors, and the biggest e-commerce company in the world. Robert, do you want to set that up for us?
Yeah, I mean, we did this story last year, but it still applies this year too, which is about Alibaba. And this was when there was a big thing about the IPO of Alibaba, and everyone was talking about it like, oh, well, you know, it's like the Chinese Amazon.com. It's like the Chinese Amazon.com. And as we were saying that, we're like, well, what does that really mean? Like, what is it about this company that gets people so excited, and how is it different and what can it teach us? And so in classic Planet Money fashion, two of our reporters, Steve Han and Zoe Chase, decided to look into it by basically trying out Alibaba. And they wanted to see how the business, this company affects entrepreneurs in China and how it affects some Northern Californian chickens.
All right, that's where our story starts, Northern California.
Sean Hector lives just outside of San Francisco, and about a year and a half ago, he bought some baby chicks.
He wanted to put them outside in a little chicken coop, hoping eventually he would get some eggs.
It did not go well.
They were eaten by numerous animals.
First, they attacked from the sky.
Hawks, which are interesting. They only eat the brain and leave the rest of the chicken, so that's interesting to find.
Then the ground.
Raccoons, which basically ransack everything. You find nothing left.
The sneakiest?
Foxes.
A fox in a hen house. This is not a new problem.
But Sean is a Silicon Valley kind of guy. He designs semiconductors for a living. And he decided the world needs a better chicken coop. And he and his buddy, Steve Deutsch, should build it themselves.
Maybe it could be the start of a business. Lots of people have chickens in their backyards these days. There is a market for a tricked out chicken coop.
High tech. It would count the chickens as they go in, lock the door behind them, send you a text about it, an infrared sensor to spot the raccoons.
The parts for a chicken coop like that, they are made in China.
And years ago, it would have taken flights, a translator, dinners, probably karaoke to build a relationship with suppliers in China to go into the automated chicken coop business.
Today, there's Alibaba. Alibaba is the biggest e-commerce site in China, actually the biggest in the world. It sells almost anything you can imagine.
A used 747, an oil tanker.
Steel beams, industrial cranes.
500 million tiny screws.
Yes, there are thousands and thousands of Chinese manufacturers on this website.
So the chicken coop guys decided to give it a try. They pull up Alibaba and type in the word chicken.
Poultry, chicken, eyeglasses.
Wow. Poultry chicken eyeglasses?
Makes sense, yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Whoa.
Antennas? Steve found antennas. Those could be useful.
That's not expensive, Steve.
That is not expensive.
That's cheap.
$6? Yeah.
That's very cheap.
That's a pretty big antenna to attach to a chicken, but, you know, hopefully.
And here's where Alibaba's different from Amazon. You can actually chat online with manufacturers. Get stuff custom made. The main thing these guys want is a door that can open and close automatically. And to do that, they need a little programmable motor, something called a stepper motor.
Let's look for the motor first. So let's start with a stepper motor. And as soon as I type step, it comes up with it.
More than 50,000 results for stepper motors pop up. They find some they like and they place an order with a company called Guangzhou Hongyi Automation Company Limited. It says free shipping and 96.2% of buyers enjoyed this product. 28 votes.
And we were curious about exactly who was on the other end of this transaction. So we called.
Hello, is this Zhong Chun Sai?
Yes.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Yes. What's your name?
He's 26, in charge of sales. He says his company's pretty new. How much of your business comes through Alibaba?
80%.
Around 80%, he says. He spends 10 to 12 hours a day on the site. It would be hard to find American clients without it. When he looks out the window of his factory, he just sees a wall. He's surrounded by other factories, clothes, shoes, bags, electronics. Without Alibaba, he says, all these many factories would not exist.
If anything, from his perspective, Alibaba's been a bit too successful. He's got so much competition, it's hard to make a profit these days.
His company packed up the stuff the chicken coop guys ordered, and off it went to the other side of the earth.
Let's see. Let's open this puppy up.
I know. It's a piece of work product. This is anti-static.
That looks like the motor driver.
The stepper motor driver. Their first high-tech chicken coop is under construction. They're building it because they think it's a good idea, but also because it was pretty easy to do.
That's Steve Henn and Zoe Chase from NPR's Planet Money. That story aired last year on NPR's Morning Edition. I'm Hannah Baba, and joining me is another Planet Money reporter, Robert Smith. So, Robert, guess what? We actually followed up with Sean Hector, who lives here in Sonoma County in Sebastopol, to see how his high-tech chicken coop venture is going. He says they lost all their chickens to foxes before they were even done building their coop.
And they're gonna try
again this spring.
It's funny. This brought back when we were planning this story, because we would have serious meetings, and one of the agenda items in the meeting would be like, well, how's the chicken coop? Well, you know, can you get to the chicken guys? Like, are the chicken guys, like, the progress of this was a big part of the story. I didn't know that they all died. That's sad.
We should do
a follow-up on it. I know.
So how did the team find this story? What makes a good Planet Money story?
Well, they all come in different ways. I mean, sometimes you meet somebody and they just tell you a story and that leads you down a certain path. But sometimes it's sort of a high concept thing where we sit around and we say, well, how is Alibaba different? What kind of things would you want to make on this? And someone says, you know, Steve's like, oh, I met some people who are trying to make this hen house and they're trying to use Alibaba. And so you just sort of brainstorm around and say, like, it would be fun to follow the progress. And you know, it's not terribly surprising, but one of the things that we try to do is to always follow the trail back, to not just say, this is important to people in China, but to call up the manufacturer, to call up the person who is using it and say, what does it mean to you? Like, this is about real people and their dreams and their businesses they're trying to build. And so to show that this sort of abstract company that we were talking about in terms of an IPO is really about chickens and about somebody who wants to sell things to people who want to make chickens, you know, who want to save their chickens.
Right.
And everything in the world is like that. There are real people with real needs and desires behind it.
Do you know what I desire right now?
What do you desire? I can't possibly guess.
30 calls or clicks right now.
You did it.
800.
Did it again.
Yes. 800-525-9917 or KALW. janetsolid.org. It's our fall membership campaign. Give us a call right now. Janet Solid of San Francisco bets that you can go, you can call and help us make the challenge. She's putting down $365. And you can do that too. It's a dollar a day, $365. Give us a call, 800-525-9917. So, Robert Smith, you know, why should people be calling? What's the importance of listeners to public radio?
Oh, well, it is everything. It is the reason why we exist, first of all. We all tell these stories because we are doing it for you, the listener. We try and figure out what does someone need to know about the day and what do they want to know and what would they enjoy hearing and what kind of stories would they like. So the audience is the main thing we think about. And so it is kind of nice that the main way we're paid for is by the audience because they're the ones we're doing this for and they're the ones that sort of pay our salaries.
And
it
they're
is
the
a
ones
nice,
who are
beautiful
going,
thing.
And they're the ones calling us right now to make a contribution at 800-525-9917 and going to kalw.org and keeping us fresh, keeping us on, and keeping us able to bring you this reporting that you're hearing now. And thank you, Robert Smith, for joining us today on this fundraising day. 800-525-9917. And we've been talking a lot about money today. Money, 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 money. Our next story is actually about how San Francisco, the city, keeps track of its money. Since 2008, San Franciscans have signed off on more than $2 billion worth of bonds. A bond is a loan taken out by the city to pay for big projects. But who keeps track of all that money? Well, in San Francisco, part of the answer to that question is people like you and me, ordinary citizens who volunteer to spend their free time sifting through reports, trying to make sure that projects stay on track. Who would sign up for this task? KLW's Raja Shah went to find out.
Before we get started, a warning. I'm going to be talking about a committee today, a committee that has a lot of responsibility and hardworking, serious people on it. One thing it doesn't have is a catchy name. Just ask Rebecca Ryan.
I am the current chair of the Citizens General Obligation Bond Oversight Committee, also lovingly known as CGOBOC.
What did you call it?
CGOBOC. Not the sexy committee in the city that people fall over each other to serve on.
But a really important one, says Ryan. Let's break it down. That name again is CGOBOC. C is for citizens. That's you and me. Next is general obligation bond. That's just a certain kind of bond, one that's paid for by property taxes. Which brings us to Oversight Committee. This is the group of nine people tasked with making sure that city projects are on time and on budget. Nine people who show up to meetings every other month, visit construction sites, draft reports, pore over audits, all for
absolutely nothing. We get water and a pad at the meeting, and I do like the pads.
All right. Who would want to do this?
Oh, I sorted out.
Zach Townsend is applying for one of three open seats on the committee.
So I think I Googled for San Francisco boards and committees, and then, like, I saw this one, and I thought to myself, wow, here is a committee that seems really boring to most people, but is not boring to me.
Townsend says he sees the committee as a way to give back. Growing up, his family didn't have a lot of money, but he says strong public institutions like free school lunch programs and magnet schools changed his life. He's been interested in public policy ever since.
To me, it's not just like an abstraction. It's like real people's lives. You're making sure that like the money that was supposed to go to playgrounds like actually goes to playgrounds, which is the point.
So if you are selected, what do you think it's going to be like?
So what I assume it'll be like, really on a practical level, is like there's a pretty nondescript conference room with some extra chairs for the public and not many people come, and you have a meeting once a month and they seem really droll and dry.
Madam Chair, at this time we have a quorum. Roll call.
Townsend's prediction is not far off, though instead of a conference room, meetings are held in a spacious hearing room on the fourth floor of City Hall. And yeah, they can be dry.
I must admit that at times our slide deck has been rather lengthy. This time we're down to 11 slides rather than the normal 20 to 30.
But they're also a chance to hear directly from city employees to make sure that the money for playgrounds actually goes to playgrounds, as Townsend put it. Siegelbach committee members sit in front of microphones on a raised platform across from a public seating area and a podium. One by one, managers for each of the city's bond projects step up and explain what they've been up to.
I don't know, many of you have driven by Mission Dolores Park lately, but it looks different.
That's Dawn Kamala Navin from the Rec and Parks Department. She's there to give an update on the 2008 Parks bond.
And here are schedules. You can see again Mission Dolores. There was a commitment made to the public that we would phase the park's delivery, doing only half of the park at a time.
Outside of these meetings, each committee member keeps track of a specific bond project. So these meetings are a way for everyone to stay in the loop. And when a project falls behind, to ask some hard questions.
Dolores Park, there were some delays there. Obviously, the schedule is pushed out. What is the impact on the funding and contingency funds, given the unforeseen site conditions?
Yeah. So there was, as a result of unforeseen site conditions from the soil profile, the stream, some soil remediation work that needed to be done, we're looking at an additional $2.2 million for the project.
And soil profile, remediation work. At this point, you may be wondering, how is a regular person supposed to make sense of all this? Most Siegelbach members, including Rebecca Ryan, are not construction experts or auditors.
I like to jokingly say I was a theater major. You know, what happened to my life?
The city controller's office actually has a full-time staff to conduct audits of these same programs. Siegelbach is an extra layer of protection on top of that. But it wasn't always this way. Back in the 90s, there were lots of problems with the city's bond projects. Wasted money, construction delays, mismanagement. The public's trust in government was low. So voters went to the ballot in 2002 and created Siegelbach.
It is in no way the only set of eyes that look upon all of these various projects. There are many, many checks and balances running through these bond programs. But one of them is the one you guys wanted.
It may be what San Franciscans wanted, but you wouldn't know it from those public meetings.
Is there a public comment? All right, seeing none. Any public comment on this report?
Okay, seeing none.
Okay, seeing no public comment.
Is there any public comment?
Public is shrinking with every passing moment.
I feel like I've asked for public comment six times in the
public comment on the committee comment we just had on the public comment.
All right, moving on.
The thing is, it's not easy to get people to show up to City Hall at 9 a.m. on a Thursday. So you can imagine that it's even harder to get people to join the committee, which makes Siegelbach hopeful Zach Townsend unique. Like, really unique.
Were there a lot of applicants?
At the time that I checked with the clerk, you were the only one.
Oh, how exciting. Oh, so I'm like the crazy guy who applied. Yeah, all right. That's cool.
Since I interviewed Townsend, a few more applications have trickled in, but not enough. The city has been delaying its decision on who to select for months, hoping that more people will apply. And Siegelbach is actually just one of dozens of committees throughout the city that are staffed by volunteers. Some do require expertise. Some, pretty much anyone can be on. Some are relatively self-explanatory, like the Elections Commission or Arts Commission. And some have even crazier names than Siegelbach, like my personal favorite, the Bay Area Regional Interoperable Communication System Joint Powers Authority, also known as the BayRICS JPA, obviously. Right now, there are about 100 open seats on these committees waiting to be filled. Residents of San Francisco can go to the Board of Supervisors or Mayor's websites and scroll through the full list of committees to see which ones have open seats. Just don't judge them by their names. In San Francisco, I'm Raja Shah for CrossCurrents.
Thanks, Raja. I'm Hannah Baba. With me is Robert Smith from Planet Money. Robert, obviously, we draw a lot of inspiration from you guys on how to make interesting stories out of things that would otherwise be complicated or maybe even boring. What did you think?
Oh, it's great. I mean, that is a trick that we use a lot, which is we just come out and just say, listen, this sounds boring. Like, it sounded boring to me at first, but it's actually interesting when you get underneath. And sometimes all it takes for a story to become interesting is for the reporter to be genuinely curious about it. And when you hear somebody curious about something and following their curiosity and asking the questions that we would all ask, like, you want to follow along with them. You're sort of rooting for the reporter to find out what's really going on. And that's what I heard in this story, and that's what I heard with Audrey's story before that. You guys are doing a great job sort of making news more human and more accessible and more interesting, even if it is about the world's most boring committee in city government.
And you know how we do that?
How do you? I could not possibly come up with the way you're going to finish that. Wait, is this through listener support?
Only with the support of our listeners. Give us a call, 800-525-9917. Right now, we are in our fall membership campaign. This is your chance to become a member. Become a member of KALW. Join the KALW family with a contribution right now. Keep this reporting coming. Keep our reporters working. Keep Cross Currents here and strong and bringing you the stories that you want to hear and the ones that are you're used to coming from Cross Currents. You know, we fan out all around the bay. We answer your questions. We want to hear from you now. Give us a call. Make a contribution at 800-525-9917 right now. Our phone volunteers are waiting for your call. There they are. I see them. Hey. Yeah, see? Two, three of them do not have calls. They're waiting for you. 800-525-9917. Call and tell us why you listen to KELW, why you listen to Cross Currents, what you like about this station, and also what we can improve, because we love communicating with our listeners, we love connecting with you, and we only answer to you. No corporate funding, no corporate underwriting, quote unquote, just you. Give us a call, 800-525-9917. With us is Robert Smith supporting the KALW in the house. Robert, we have only a couple of minutes left. Again, what is the importance of this to public radio and why? The why? What's the why?
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about economics because really, like, public radio is this economic puzzle, right? That we do all of this work, we present all of this stuff for free on the radio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can turn on the station and hear something interesting. We do this out of a sort of weird faith, a faith that if we give you something that makes you smarter, something that interests you, if we do this for you, then you will be there for us. And so, you know, for all my economics knowledge, I still don't understand how it works, but it does.
But it does.
It actually works.
So
it does.
Give us a call.
And people come through. People come through and they make the call. You should do it too.
800-525-9917. Thanks to people who are calling and clicking. Thank you to Bev from Colorado, says Cross Currents makes me feel connected to the Bay Area, even though I'm in Colorado. Thank you, Bev. Thank you to Jim Radulovich of Napa, who gave online at KALW.org. Thank you to Clint Thorne from Alameda, who called in at 800-525-9917. And we are moving closer to the end of the program and the end of the challenge. We do not want to give Janet Solid back her $365, do we? We do not. Give us a call, 800-525-9917. $120 gets you the book Out on the Wire, The Storytelling Secrets of the New Masters of Radio, including the Master of Radio, who graced our airwaves right now, Planet Money's Robert Smith. Find out his secrets in this book, $120 or $240 will send you the book, plus two tickets to a live event where you will meet Roman Mars, Glenn Washington, and Jessica Abel. But you have to give us a call right now for it to all work and come together. 800-525-9917. People are on the phones. I see them in the volunteer room. Maybe one last push, Robert, before we say goodbye.
You've got to make the call. You want to make the call. You know you do. Don't let your neighbors pay for the radio that you listen to. You should do it yourself. Do the call. I said it.
He said it. He said it. He challenged y'all. 800-525-9917. call right now, make a contribution, go online, klw.org, get the tickets, get the book, get another gift if you want. We have all kinds of stuff, mugs and t-shirts. You can get a Cross Currents t-shirt, represent Cross Currents, and help us stay fresh. Thank you so much, Robert Smith, for being a part of our show today. Really, really appreciate you being here and supporting us.
800. Oh, you're welcome. It's a great station.
Thank you so much. We're going to wrap this up at 800-525-9917. Keep those calls coming now. Oh, we're doing well on our challenge, but we still are not done. We still have time. We still have time. This is KALW San Francisco.